It's meant to be a celebration of music, spectacle and European unity. And the Aussies, of course. But as the Eurovision Song Contest marks its 70th anniversary this year, the atmosphere surrounding the competition is more complicated than ever. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. More than 160 million people still tune in globally each year to watch the competition, and demand remains huge. Organisers say 95,000 tickets for this year's live shows in Vienna sold out rapidly, and fans are travelling from 75 countries around the world to attend. It has definitely evolved far beyond a TV contest. It is now a global cultural event. But this anniversary arrives under a cloud of controversy and boycotts and major security concerns. Several broadcasters, including Ireland, and artists have questioned Israel's participation amid the war in Gaza, while protests are expected across Vienna during Eurovision week. And the question on Eurovision fans' lips is, can Eurovision survive all of this? Well, joining me now is Strategy Director at Car Communications and Eurovision superfan and analyst Johnny Fallon. And I'm also joined by Mara Heveston-Dahl. She's the author of a recently published piece in the New York Times that looked at how Israel has managed to turn Eurovision, it says, into a soft power tool. Johnny, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily. Now, you and I over the years have talked about politics, geopolitical tensions, international affairs. And today we're talking about Eurovision, Johnny. You're a fan?
Yeah, that's always some sort of a surprise. But then when you get into the depths of Eurovision fans, you find an awful lot of politicos and people who love voting and are voting nerds also love Eurovision for many of the same reasons.
Now, I'm not going to stand on any judgment. I had Johnny Logan's Hold Me Now at my wedding 3 times. I'm a huge Eurovision fan. What is it about it other than the voting patterns that you enjoy?
Well, I think about there's a lot about Eurovision that is down to the, let's call it, the ridiculous nature of it all. That it takes across so many patterns, votings, things you can read into it, things that people hear and see. But the music is always so cheesy. Let's face it, it's not usually, there's only a handful of songs that have gone to the absolute top of the charts from it. A lot of the music is a one-off thing. It's a one-off event. And it's over the years has always been this great festival of countries coming together, different cultures, different music streams, the crazy, the good, the ones you like, the ones you hate. And it's just a great event for people just letting off steam and enjoying the whole cheesiness of it all without having to fall out with each other. You know, was a real sharing of countries and their own cultures, and everybody could wave a flag and not fall out over anything, because at the end of the day, it is just a cheesy song contest. So why would you have a row about it, even though sometimes political leaders and many others take it very seriously for that point?
But we know Ireland, along with 4 other countries, have withdrawn this year over Israel's participation. Where does that leave the contest, do you think?
I think it's been a particularly difficult period for Eurovision, and the countries withdrawing this year have left it quite difficult. It's been a difficult time for the Eurovision fans within the countries who have decided to pull out. But I think overall the contest will continue. It will have a huge number of entrants. It's still, you know, many would say losing a few countries wouldn't be a bad thing for Eurovision because it's got so big now. So I don't think that the amount of countries being absent from it will be particularly noticed. But for the countries that are there, it's still going to be the huge usual celebration of it. I do think it will still have that connotation at the back of it, though, that feeling that Israel, there is a problem there. There was a problem during the week with some of their advertising around voting multiple times. And that's left a little bit of a bad taste. But I think Eurovision has overcome bigger issues than that. And I'm sure it will again as an overall contest.
So do you not feel any moral dilemma watching it this year?
I think from an Irish perspective, you will feel a moral dilemma. If your country is boycotting it for a reason, I think you will feel that there's some kind of dilemma in it. I mean, anybody that would have looked at the events in the Middle East couldn't but feel that there was a moral dilemma there. However, the difficulty is, I think for a lot of Eurovision fans, they will also look at Ireland competing in the Euros in football, and there will be no question of Ireland boycotting any UEFA or FIFA competition because of Israel's participation. But there is a sense that with Eurovision, it wasn't Eurovision fans that decided it. It was mostly decided by people who aren't fans of the contest in any event and felt that it would be a statement. It would actually be a much bigger statement if Ireland withdrew from a football competition than Eurovision, but so be it. I think there is a moral dilemma for people. It will always feel a bit difficult. It's very hard to have watched anything that happened in the Middle East and the actions of Israel and the Israeli army in the Middle East and not feel that, yeah, when that song comes on, you are going to feel a moral dilemma in watching it. And I think that's heightened for people in Spain, Netherlands, Ireland, where the country, their TV station representing the country has withdrawn from it as well. And I suppose that's the other thing to mention, that everybody forgets these are TV stations that are competing, not countries or governments in any way.
Looking at the bigger picture, Johnny, do you feel like this is a really important moment that could change the Eurovision going forward?
I think it is. I think it's a huge moment for Eurovision because I think modern morals and diplomacy and indeed the nature of modern conflicts are going to be harder for it to navigate. I think if you go back to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, it faced a difficulty there. There was almost unanimous belief among all of the member states that they wanted to see Russia out or the Russian TV station out. Now, the real problem behind the scenes was that the Russian TV station did not have any friends among any of the EBU broadcasters, because all of those broadcasters felt that the Russian TV station was always pushing the propaganda rules to the limit and that they were not really a free station. And therefore, at the first opportunity, Russia was put out. But they very quickly, within a day of saying it was bringing the competition into disrepute, they very quickly came back with a statement saying this is actually about the fact that the TV station is not independent. And that's why. So Eurovision over the years, when they've had to make a decision, they look for technical rules. They find a reason to technically put somebody out. The difficulty they've run into this time was that there was no technical reason to put KAN, the Israeli TV station, out. They are independent of government. Indeed, they've been one of the more critical stations of the government. That created a real problem for Eurovision, because the moral problem in countries, and I totally would understand that the pressure that people felt like we don't want to be part of a contest where Israel is getting to win or be seen to promote itself through it. And that created huge pressure. Countries like Ireland have withdrawn, but the question is now Eurovision has to deal with that, because how does Ireland come back in? You know, you remember some years ago when in Catalonia there was a mini revolution that was put down by the Spanish government, and there was some question marks over the way it was put down. Would that be a moral objection to go against it if a government does something on its own people or has something morally repugnant? Because Eurovision over the years has always overcome the wars in Yugoslavia, the genocide that happened there, yet all the countries participated. This is a slight change, and I think it's probably a change for the future that they're going to struggle to contend with.
And surely what they're really going to struggle to contend with more than anything is that the central tenet of the Eurovision was that it was meant to be not political, and it's not that anymore.
I think, to be honest, Eurovision was always political. You know, it was always a political contest, even though the TV stations who ran it always tried to say, look, it's non-political and we won't take sides in a conflict. And you can understand why they've always felt that, because you do not want TV stations to be the moral judges of who's right or wrong in a conflict. They should never be. And that's why they jumped in to find technical rules when they were putting a country out. They wouldn't have decided who was right or wrong in Yugoslavia. They didn't decide, unlike the EU, who wouldn't have allowed Spain or Greece in while they were under dictatorships. Those countries competed in Eurovision while they had those dictatorships, because people didn't take that view that TV stations weren't the judge of who is right or wrong in it. That's changing. And I think the pressure on TV stations is now there to change that. It's always been political. TV Franco were famously, you know, was supposed to have bribed Cliff Richard out of his Eurovision title, and he came second and Spain won because of supposed bribing by Franco at that contest. It's always been political, as in people wave flags, they do it. But it has always survived on the idea that, as I said at the outset, people do step back and go, but this has been ridiculous. Winning Eurovision actually brings zero benefit to you as a country, even as a propaganda tool. It doesn't really do much other than the week it happens. It isn't as powerful as football or other things. It is all a little bit ridiculous. Now there's a change that there's a lot of voices saying Eurovision is not ridiculous. Eurovision is something really important, even if there's not much evidence behind it. And I think that's forcing TV stations to become the moral judges of who should and shouldn't be in a contest and who's right or wrong in a conflict. I think that's got big implications for the EBU going forward. And they've tried to avoid it, but the nations pulling out, I think, has left it that that's going to be a hot potato they can't avoid in the future. And a lot of that is driven by just sheer the public opinion is not happy. It's not happy with what it's seen in Israel, understandably. It's not happy with the actions of certain countries. But the EBU, I think, will be looking a little bit enviously at some of the football associations like UEFA. I'm wondering, how can they avoid all the political pressure, but we can't? How come everyone still competes, but we get told we have to pull out? I think there is going to be a little bit of trying to decide that how do they re-communicate what Eurovision is and who's actually competing here, because there seems to be huge misunderstandings about it and what the benefit is to any country.
We are joined now by Mara Heveston-Dahl. She's the author of a recently published piece in the New York Times, which is discussing how Israel has actually managed to turn the Eurovision, they say, into this soft power tool. Mara, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I mean, I think there will be people listening thinking, you know what, given what Israel has faced in recent years, its diplomatic priorities, its work to try and improve its reputation internationally might be focused somewhere other than the Eurovision, but you say, no, not quite, not necessarily.
Sure. For sure, the Israeli government has other priorities right now. But what we found was that since the onset of the war in Gaza, the government has kind of gone all out on using Eurovision as a way to showcase a softer side to Israel. So that includes funding ads, mobilizing officials to call for people to vote the maximum number of times for Israel's singers. And then more recently, as it became clear that countries like Ireland might be boycotting the contest, mobilizing diplomats and officials to raise the issue in backroom discussions.
So this was all part of your investigation with your colleagues at the New York Times to look at what Israel's government had done to try and use the event as sort of a promotional tool. Give me a greater sense, I suppose, of that work that was going on behind the scenes.
Right. So already from last year's contest, there were concerns about the unexpected result for Israel's singer, Yuval Rafael.
And who was runner-up for any non-Eurovision fans out there?
Yeah, she came in second place and she actually won the popular vote, including in some countries where anti-Israel sentiment's quite strong. And so that surprised a lot of people at the time. And given that the government officials had been calling for people to vote the maximum number of times, quite quickly there were calls from countries for more data, kind of to understand what had happened. And then later there started to be calls for a boycott. And very quickly, the Israeli government mobilized diplomats to try to counter that, to kind of get ahead of a crucial vote in the European Broadcasting Union, so the group that controls Eurovision. And so that include, you know, reaching out to broadcasters, reaching out in some cases to a country, in one case to a country's foreign ministry, you know, really raising this in backroom discussions. And they had support from Germany, it seems from Estonia as well, also from Austria, which crucially is the host of this year's Eurovision, and, you know, did manage to foil a larger boycott.
So those social media campaigns that the government was behind, or the advertising that they were behind, none of that is illegal, but the spend, I suppose, was notable, and it's not something that you see other governments doing.
It's not illegal. Eurovision claims to be non-political. There is a long history of countries trying to turn it political, trying to mobilize their diasporas in different ways. However, the Israeli campaign last year went far beyond what we've seen with other countries. And even Eurovision itself says it was excessive. What we found is that it actually started earlier than was previously known. That the year before, so the first year after October 7th, after the war in Gaza started, already that year the Israeli government was funding quite a lot of ads and doing some of the same tactics that we saw last year in the contest.
And why do you think this was important for them? I mean, why do they see the Eurovision as being something that it's significant for the country to influence?
Well, first of all, Eurovision is quite popular in Israel. They have won it four times, including with the first transgender singer to win in 1998, I believe. And so, you know, it has a kind of natural popularity there. And some of the people we talked to kind of compared it to sports for other countries, that it is something at which Israel can do quite well and has done well in the past. But I think now, given some of the outcry over the war in Gaza in some countries, the Israeli government viewed it as an opportunity to present a softer side, to kind of show that in countries like Ireland, like Spain, that the people don't actually agree with the governments. That was something that a number of Israeli officials told me, that, you know, the first place finish of Israel's singer last year shows that the people in these countries are actually not agreeing with their governments when it comes to Israel.
Okay, so for the Israeli government, you're saying it was really important domestically because it is popular there, but also internationally because it is the biggest cultural event in the world. There's an audience of 166 million. And as you say, it is a celebration generally of the country that wins. You mentioned that there was internal divisions within the EBU, with some countries threatening to withdraw if Israel stayed in, which happened, and others if it didn't. There is a sense, I suppose, of warring factions here. How close was it to destabilizing the contest entirely?
It did come close to destabilizing the contest because, you know, one option that was on the table in a legitimate way was sort of skipping this year's contest. And it still remains to be seen what's going to happen after this year, because they're beginning the contest this week in Vienna in disarray. A few years ago, there was a conflict over Russia participating in Eurovision. They were kicked out, and there was, you know, far more agreement on that topic than we've seen on Israel. Just a lot of division with countries like Germany, which is a very important country for Eurovision, opposed, and even Austria, the host, at one point threatening to pull out, according to one knowledgeable source we spoke with.
Okay, so the EBU in some ways was kind of stuck in the middle here, and either outcome for them, it would appear, risked big financial losses for the Eurovision.
That's right. I mean, they told us that their finances are sound, that you know, overall they'll weather the storm. But it's clear from our reporting that they stood to lose significant fees either way. And that's not even including money from sponsors. So they have acknowledged that they are entering this year's contest facing issues with sponsors who, you know, understandably don't want to back an event that is controversial.
So they really struggled to get sponsors then for this year's event.
Yes, they acknowledged that to us.
On the voting itself, Israel won the popular vote, as you say, and it won it in places where public opinion doesn't necessarily align. Based on your own analysis and your own investigations for the New York Times, how much could organized campaigns actually have influenced the result there?
We found, quite interestingly, in some countries, the number of votes cast is actually quite small. And because organizers allow people to vote multiple times, that means that it would not have taken that many people to actually influence the outcome. And each country matters because of the way the vote is calculated. And in some of those countries, you know, fewer than 500 people could have determined the outcome if they'd all voted the maximum times. We did also speak with people who told us they had voted 20 times for Israel. You know, we know this did happen to some degree. We don't know exactly how many people did that because Eurovision will not release the average number of times that people voted for Israel.
And you get that sense when you read the article that there isn't huge amount of transparency coming from the EBU when it comes to how people voted.
No. And I mean, to the degree that member broadcasters were asking for more data from their own countries. I mean, they were asking for the breakdown of votes in their own countries and for the most part had difficulty getting that information from the EBU.
And to be fair, there is no evidence, is there, that Israel, as some Eurovision fans have speculated, used bots or any other sort of covert tactics to try and manipulate this vote?
No, and actually we talked with an Israeli watchdog group who did look into that. That was speculated last year. They did not find any evidence of that. And their conclusion was similar to ours, that in some countries it's fairly easy to influence the outcome with just not that many people. So then, you know, if you have a social media campaign, you could actually have a chance at winning.
So what do you expect to see this year then, Mara? What should people be looking out for?
Well, Ireland and the four other countries that are boycotting will not be voting. So, you know, that could affect the outcome in some way. Finland is the contest favorite, but, you know, we could see Israel do well once again. Martin Green, the contest director, even told us as much.
But again, that could be completely legitimate. People could just like the song.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, there are always surprises at Eurovision.
That's the thing.
I mean,
how much of a difficulty would it be for organisers, do you think, if Tel Aviv did win this year, if Israel did win this year and it was hosted there next year?
That would definitely be a challenge. I mean, Israel's hosted not that long ago in 2019, and there were security issues at the time. Ukraine, of course, won in 2022, and then the contest had to be moved to Liverpool. So they hosted the following year. But there were some proposals on the table to actually ban any country in crisis from participating as kind of a way around this issue.
Sort of try and pull the politics out of the competition again. Was that the idea?
Yes, but obviously Israel opposed that measure, and as did some others. It would have also affected Ukraine. And, you know, then you get into the question of who's in crisis and, you know, what qualifies.
So how damaged do you think Eurovision is after all of this? And what does it mean for the competition going forward?
Well, the watch party I usually attend has been cancelled. And I think that's true for many other people, probably in Ireland and other countries. It will affect viewership. I think it's affecting sponsorship. It's affecting the mood of the contest, I've heard. And so, you know, it remains to be seen. Can the spirit of Eurovision that people have loved for so many years, can that endure?
Johnny and Mara, thank you so much for joining me here today on News Talk Daily. So are you going to be watching Eurovision by any means necessary? Drop me an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or get me on Instagram where you can send me a message at @officialKiraD. Don't forget to give us a like and a follow on Apple, on Spotify or on Go Loud or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. That way you won't miss any News Talk Daily going forward. Until tomorrow morning, goodbye.